Welcome to Two-Way Talk here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely, without question, the voice of the people. I'm Anthony McCarthy. My co-host is not here today. She had a loss in her family, and we send out our condolences and love to Kara Williams. We are moving ahead with the show, and boy, do we have a great show for you today. Dr. Sharon Wright Austin is a professor of political science at the University of Florida and has also taught courses at the universities of Louisville, Michigan, and Missouri Columbia. She is also an author of several books. Dr. Austin is usually here to talk politics with us, but she's here today for something very personal. Dr. Austin wants to talk to us about autism. Dr. Austin, welcome back to Two-Way Talk.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the show again.
It's always great to have you here. The last time you were on, we talked about everything Florida politics, and we got so many emails and texts. Our listeners love you, so I'm so glad you're back with us today. Talk to me. As a mother, you know when something is wrong about your child. When did you know, and what did you notice?
Right. My son is 16. He'll be 17 in January.
Wow.
And he has a severe form of autism. I knew when, I think probably when he was about a year old, when he was walking, he has always walked on his toes. And I knew then that something was different about the way he walked. And then later, when he didn't start to talk, he didn't really start to say his, well, he said some words, but he didn't really start to talk until he was probably about four, almost five. So I knew when he probably was about a year old, but well before he was two. And once he was two, that was when he was diagnosed.
Now, what was the feeling like when you learned that your child had been diagnosed with autism? Did you need to learn about it? Did you need to learn what the limitations were, maybe what his future looked like?
Right. I had to do research because I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Well, I knew somewhat what it was.
Me too, a little bit.
I have a cousin who, she's in her 40s now, and she has autism. But I still didn't really know very much about what it was because she was the only person in our family that had ever had any type of disability. So I immediately started just reading as much as I could. One thing that really helped me was Holly Robinson-Pete has a grown son who has autism. And then there are some other celebrities like Tisha Campbell also has a grown son. Toni Braxton, her oldest son, has autism. And so I watched an interview with Holly Robinson-Pete. She was on Oprah Winfrey's show. And Jenny McCarthy was also on the show. And they were talking about their children and autism. And I had just kind of learned that my son had it. And so that was very helpful. And that's probably one of the reasons why I reached out today to just to talk about autism, because usually people just don't talk about it.
That's right.
Especially in the black community. And that's why, since I've been on your show and Dr. K's show several times, I'm hoping that maybe just with what I share today about my son and my experience and those of people that I know who have family members with autism, that this will help someone.
Me too. I want to invite our listeners, if you have questions about autism, if you have questions about your children or maybe something that you've noticed, please give us a call. And Dr. Austin is not an expert, but she is a mom and she has experienced this. So give us a call and ask your questions at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888 if you have to any questions or want to join our conversation. Now, when you started learning, Dr. Austin, about autism, how did that inform you about your child's growing up and what was available to him, what may be limiting to him? How did you learn as much as you could about autism?
I just started reading things online, and I started buying books. I went to the library, and I checked out a lot of books. But mostly I just read things online, and that was really helpful. And then we have something in Florida called Child Find, which they probably have in Maryland as well. Probably have it in every state. And so they were the agency that officially diagnosed him, and they helped him to get into preschool when he was about three. And I found out he even could have gone to school even before that, even as early as 18 months. and he could have gotten services, but I didn't know about them.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the things that I want to point out is that a lot of black families especially get help for their kids at a much later age. The average black child is diagnosed at around ages 4 or 5, but children of other races are diagnosed as early as maybe 18 months or sometimes even sooner than that. And the sooner you get your child diagnosed, the sooner you can get them services that probably will really make a difference. And I mean, I guess you really don't know how much progress your child is going to make, but you know that he'll get somewhere from just getting services. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now, I'm curious. Now, when you were told of the diagnosis, your mom, did you get a second or third opinion? How did you go about mm-hmm. making sure that you had a proper diagnosis for your child?
Yeah, that's a good idea to get more than one diagnosis, because I went, I took my son to a doctor, and, you know, this was sort of like a doctor who dealt with like neurology, and she ran a test and found that he had autism. And then at Child Find, they also ran a test, and that qualified him for services at public school. And then I also went to another psychiatrist, a youth psychiatrist, and they ran a test. So I already knew, because uh-huh. I could tell from my son's behavior that something was different. But I did get a second opinion, and that's a good idea, because my son has severe autism, but sometimes children with mild autism may not necessarily even have it. And so someone might say that, oh, your child has autism, but then you might later find out years later that they never really had it in the first place.
Mm.
And that's why I think sometimes it's even harder for people who have children with mild autism, or Asperger's syndrome is what they call it,
mm-hmm.
because it's harder for you to get services for your child, because your child looks and acts normally, except for maybe a few things. And as a result of that, when you try to get services and get help for your child, your son or daughter, people look at you and they say, oh, well, there's nothing wrong with him or her.
Oh, wow.
they probably are just bad, or they just need a whooping or something like that. But really, it's harder for them because you can't really see it from looking at them. But as a parent, you know that something is different about your child. So I would say always listen to your first instincts. If
yes.
you feel anything is wrong, immediately take your child and get them diagnosed, and then get a second opinion. And if you still don't think your child has autism, I would still get them help.
Uh-huh.
But it could be at some point in the future, if you continue to get them help, they might be diagnosed maybe 2 or 3 years down the road, and you may find that they never really had in the first place. But nevertheless, it still is important to try to get some help if you think anything is different about your child.
Now, we have heard over and over again that autism is a spectrum. And
mm-hmm.
I worked with a doctor at Hopkins. We were involved in a lot of the same programs, and I noticed there was something a little different about him. And one day we were having lunch, and that's when he told me he had Asperger's. And
mm-hmm.
he said that he explained the whole process, that it was on the spectrum, and that it had limited a little bit of his development. But like I said, he was a doctor at Hopkins. So I knew, I said, wow. So what, when we look at that spectrum, where does your son fall, and what were some of the challenges that you face as a mom raising a child on that spectrum?
Right. There is a spectrum that ranges from mild to severe.
Mm-hmm.
My son is on the severe end, because he can speak, but he still is considered to be nonverbal, but he can express what he wants. He
uh-huh.
can use sign language. He can say words. He can even say sentences. So he's come a long way. But his is severe simply because of the behavioral problems that he has with what they call it stimming. He might hum to himself
mm-hmm.
With the lack of eye contact, the fact that he walks on his toes, the fact that sometimes his behaviors are aggressive, meaning that, you know, he engages in hitting and that type of thing. And so my son is on the severe autism level.
Now, have you noticed, I want you to share whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you noticed that the autism has limited his ability to progress, to move forward? Has it limited his ability to achieve in school, achieve his little things like sports and all those things? Has it limited his life at all?
It has limited his life in a significant number of ways, but I think as a parent, you have to think about not so much the disability, but there's a phrase that says that we don't look at the disability,
yes.
We look at the possibilities.
Possibilities,
and that's
yes.
sort of the way that I see it. And then also at my church, we study something that if you look at a cup that's half full of water, how do you see that cup? Is it half empty or is it half full? So when I look at my situation, like, you have to think about things in a positive light rather than a negative light. So it has limited him in a number of ways, mm-hmm. in the sense that, you know, my son being 16, almost 17, I have a neighbor next door that's the same age, that's just learned how to drive, that's just, you know, is applying to college,
uh-huh.
he's getting ready to take his SAT. Those are things that my son is never going to do.
Wow.
But I don't really worry about it. I mean,
of course.
You know, sometimes even in the past, people have sort of maybe felt sorry for me, but I don't feel sorry for myself because I love my son,
mm-hmm.
and I love him exactly as he is. And I think as a person who believes in God, that God gave me special needs son for a reason which I probably will never understand why. But, you know, God had says that I will never leave you or forsake you. And so as hard as it has been for my son with the various things that he's dealt with over the years, I sort of just think of him as a gift from God. This is
mm-hmm.
what God wanted you to have a son. I always wanted a son. I always wanted a daughter. Now I have both.
Mm.
And God gave you that. And now God is going to give you everything you need to help you
take
care of him. It might not seem like it sometimes,
yep.
but he does. But to answer your question, as far as it's limited a number of things, it's hard to take my son out in public because he doesn't do well around crowds,
uh-huh.
and noises. And something might set him off. And then sometimes, you know, as a person who has a special needs family member, you get used to people staring at you.
I bet.
Because I don't even really care. If I had a dollar for every time somebody stared at me, especially when he was little.
Uh-huh.
So you get used to that. And so that kind of makes him uncomfortable when we go out in public and kids when he was little would see him. And sometimes they'd be afraid of him, or sometimes they stare at him, or sometimes even people will make negative comments.
Ugh.
Like, most of the time, people are very polite.
Uh-huh.
But every once in a while, you'll have someone, especially when he was smaller, and if he'd be having a meltdown, people would look at me like, or my husband, like, oh, why don't you do something?
Exactly.
Like, you know, it's that simple.
Yes.
So, I mean, it has limited some things in his life. He goes to a special needs school. They do an excellent job of helping him. He gets various types of therapies. But there still are some things he's never going to achieve. But I don't really think about it like that. I just think about how far he's come
mm-hmm.
In the time that since the time that he was diagnosed and the progress that he's made. And I sort of just try and just look at him and just love him because he
right.
is very lovable and just look at him for the gift that he is.
Now, we have a lot of callers who've called in. We want to invite them to join our conversation. Dr. Sharon Wright Austin is sharing with us today about her son and his autism. If you have questions, just give us a call at 410-319-8888. Let's go to Kadria, calling from right here in Baltimore. Welcome to the conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So good to hear you again. Listen, I want to ask that doctor because these are two questions I have. Number one is about her autistic son and the black males.
Okay.
About 5 years ago, I remember reading, I don't know if it was a medical journal or what, but that it was an upswing in black males being born with autism. I want to know, does she have any, what are her thoughts on this?
Uh-huh.
The latest medical finding, and what does she think? I think all the time they have some undercover stuff going because I think they want to castrate and stop our race, okay? Before you answer that,
okay.
The next question is about the young girls. Now, my daughter is like 32, the one I'm talking about. She had a child as a teenager, and she had a cesarean section. Now, my understanding is that a woman, when she gets like 17, 18, 19, those are her prime years for having babies because her womb is strong and stronger and blah, blah, blah. Millions of them black women was having cesarean sections. An old Indian doctor told me he thought it was some kind of collaboration because it causes scars, it can cause a sterilization and infections in the women.
Mm-hmm.
So since she's a doctor, I want to know her opinion on both of these issues.
Thank you very much for calling in. Dr. Austin, I want you just to address the first part of her question, a rise in autism in black boys.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? What do you think caused? I remember just when I first started hearing about autism, it is not something I heard about growing up.
Right. I didn't hear about it growing up either, except for I mentioned the fact that I do have someone in my family who's in her 40s who has autism, but it was never discussed. And I remember, you know, at a lot of schools now, they have a program that's specifically for children with autism and other developmental disabilities. And there were different special education classes when I was in school, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't an autism program. But to address the first part of her question about black boys, I had just read about this to sort of refresh my memory before the show, but it said that there's no evidence that there is, I guess, more of a likelihood of black boys to get autism.
Uh-huh.
But I find that hard to believe. And the reason is because my son, over the years, has been, of course, in different autism classes and sometimes even in specific autism schools. And at every school he has gone to, most of the kids there have been boys. And also a significant number of them have been black boys.
Mm.
In some cases, half of the boys in the class have been black. The classes tend to be small. They usually have like maybe 5 or 6 kids at most. But nevertheless, if you've got 6 kids and 3 of them are black, then that tells you, even though, you know, studies are showing that black boys are not more likely to get it, I find it hard to believe. And I think a lot of it is definitely has been proven that black children, male and female, are diagnosed at a later age.
Uh-huh.
They don't get the help and the services they need as early as, I guess, as white children, other children of color. But they say that there's no evidence of that, but I find it hard to believe. And I couldn't really hear the second part of her question.
Well, it was interesting. She was talking about C-sections and the likelihood. But I'm very curious, do you believe, and just to follow what she was saying a little bit deeper without getting too deep in it, she believes that there is a conspiracy in the medical community to have black boys develop this disease.
Hmm.
I'm not sure how that happens.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that happens, but I thought I would at least present that question to you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's any evidence of that, but then again, the black community, we did have the
syphilis. Yep.
So, I mean, we have a right to be suspicious of things.
Of course.
I don't think there's anything purposeful going on, and over the years, people have always asked me, well, why do you think your son has autism, or was there anything about you, or is anything wrong? Well, no, because I'm a very healthy person. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I exercise. I had a healthy pregnancy. I had my son when I was 39, which was, I guess, an advanced age, but I was a very healthy woman. We had no problems, no complications at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just see it as it was just God's will.
Yeah.
And it was just meant to be. For some reason, I was chosen as the mother to be the parent of a child with autism. And, you know, I've done the best I could to raise him as best I could. So I don't know of any conspiracies. But then again, you know, in the black community, we shouldn't just write
stuff
off.
We cannot write stuff off. That's right. You are right. 410-319-8888. We're talking to Dr. Sharon Wright Austin about autism today. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Dion calling from Maryland. Dion, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Hello.
Thanks for having me. Yes, I have had the honor of being a special educator.
Oh, wonderful.
Students,
thank you for your service.
Who have been diagnosed with autism, and they are some of my best friends. We like to call them friends rather than students with autism.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to say about that whole conspiracy, I used to feel the same way. I am African American.
Uh-huh.
But nope, all walks, Caucasian, Indian, you name it. A spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And it affects so many of our young people, but it's not a death wish. Some of these students, like you said, it's a spectrum. It goes from 1 to 5. I don't know if you're familiar with the different levels.
I'm not.
Of autism.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I taught severe profound,
okay,
which is nonverbal, can be aggressive,
mm-hmm,
and it's all sensory related. You know, you put them in an environment that has to be controlled and has to be consistent. They have to be on that regimented schedule.
Mm.
Consistency, the same, everything, down to their breakfast,
mm-hmm,
down to them getting dressed. So, yeah, I love working with these students. I think they're fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
They have so much to offer. I think a lot of miseducation.
Yep.
Which causes a lot of these conspiracies. The world is changing, and Mom, yes, you are blessed. You were chosen, and your son is very lucky to have you as his advocate. And I'm very lucky to have been given the gift to work with these students. So it's a win. And thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. I really appreciate you calling in and sharing that information.
Thank you. We really, these autism, these special needs educators, I don't know what I would have done over the years if my son had not had such excellent teachers and teaching assistants. So I really thank her for her service.
Now, I remember being at a football game, and I was sitting beside a family in the mayor's box. And their little boy, he was little, like 4 or 5 years old. But I did not understand. You can be advanced age. I was in my 30s, but I just didn't get it. And they had, he was wearing headphones. He had glasses on that were dark glass. There was so much. And his mother was very attentive to him. And I finally just asked the father, I said, well, I'm curious about your son. And he was so kind throughout the entire game and our interaction that I realized it was okay to ask him. And that's when he told us, he said, our son has autism. And he's very sensitive to light. He's very sensitive to sound. He's very sensitive to people. And I remember his wife saying to me, and I think just trying to be compassionate I said, well, I feel very sorry for you. And the mother said, do not feel sorry for us. And I remember, I wish I could just take those words back. She said, don't ever feel sorry for us. She said, what you don't see are those incredible moments when I get to be a mother to this extraordinary child. And I said, wow, I will never do that again. let's try to get another caller in. Let's go to Rich. Rich, I saw you up on the screen and then you disappeared. Welcome back to Two Way Talk.
Hi, yes. I'm really just calling to really compliment the doctor and also you. It's a fabulous show.
Thank you.
Special educator. And I've, doing one of the things that happened, I guess you could say, one of the light moments in the midst of this pandemic. And for all the years we've been married, I never got to really see her teach.
Oh, wow.
But when the virtual learning, I was able to witness her with her students and see the interaction. It was just in awe of all of that. And Dr. Austin, you really had your explanations and the challenges that you're dealing with, and also in your genuine description of what you have encountered and what your son has dealt with, really shed a light for me. And I want to thank you for, you know, taking the time to so clearly and just in plain language explain just give us a glimpse into what it's like to have a child with autism.
Rich, that music means we're out of time. Thank you so much.
I didn't even hear it.
Oh, that's all right. Thank you so much. We have two more callers on the line. Dr. Austin, if you can stay over the break, we'll take those calls when we get back. I'm talking to Dr. Sharon Wright Austin. We're talking about autism. Her son is autistic. We'll be back in just a moment to Two Way Talk. Welcome back to Two Way Talk here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Anthony McCarthy. We're talking with Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, who normally is on the program talking politics with us, but today she's talking about something a little bit more personal. She's talking about her son, who was diagnosed with autism, and what it was like raising, or what it is like raising, her son. And she's sharing with us many stories about autism. We want to invite you to join us at 410-319-8255. 8888. Dr. Austin, I appreciate you staying on with us as we take these additional callers. Karen is calling. She's a new caller from right here in Baltimore. Welcome, Karen, to Two Way Talk.
Hi.
Hi there.
I enjoy the topic. And I just wanted to say just a couple of things.
Okay.
I remember about five years or more that there was some anti-vax going on about autism. So I just wanted to know if what your guests thought about that. And then the second thing was...
Before you ask the second thing, I missed what you asked. The anti-what?
There was some rhetoric going on about vaccination.
Okay.
Being mm-hmm. the cause
Thank
of
you.
Autism.
Thank you. Go ahead. And your second part of your question?
And the second part was that I have noticed that there is a lot of information about autism in the general public.
Uh-huh.
I was looking at Daniel Tiger, and which is a preschool thing on PBS. And they had a episode of what autism was,
mm-hmm.
and it explained it in terms that like a preschooler or a 3 or 4 or 5 year old could understand. And I thought that was very forward thinking.
That's wonderful. Karen, yes. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Austin, I do want to ask you about that. Has there been much rhetoric? There was a connection to autism and vaccinations. People mm-hmm. were saying that children may develop autism if you get them vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that rhetoric around vaccination?
Yeah, I heard that rumor, but it was later found to
not be true. Uh-huh.
At one time, people were refusing to give their children the measles vaccine because of a rumor that it caused autism, but it was later found that that wasn't true. I know even with my son, I knew that he had autism. I mean, he started getting vaccinated when he was, you know, a few days old, but
uh-huh.
I know that the vaccines didn't cause it, because now that I think back to when he was a baby, even we could even see some things that we didn't understand at the time that were sort of abnormal, and we didn't think very much of it because we thought he would just grow out of it.
Uh-huh.
But I think with my son, it was just something in the development of his brain. I don't think vaccines had anything to do with it. And at one time, a lot of children were getting measles because their parents were refusing to give them the vaccine because of these rumors, but they were later found to not be true.
Now, one of the other things, she mentioned Daniel Tiger, the animated show for children, had an autistic character. And I remember Sesame Street was very
right.
proud when they introduced one of their characters with autism as an effort to really explain to people what was going on. That public understanding, that public education, very important for people to understand.
Right, exactly. Because as she mentioned, there's not a lot of information out there. I think you hear more about it now
yes.
than in the past. And I think every year, I guess you're hearing more and more as more children are being diagnosed. But for some reason, I think you don't hear a whole lot about autism or just mental health issues, period.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is because of the stigma of mental illness, especially in the Black community. You just don't. I know even BET had some shows that I watched a few months ago, and they had like some small videos that talked about different portrayals of mental illness, because no one wants to think that, oh, well, you know, you're crazy or
That's
your
right.
kids are crazy. And we tend to think that, but it's best to go ahead and find out if you know someone in your family that has a problem,
mm-hmm.
it's best to go ahead and just find out what's going on with them and deal with it and get them some help rather than being in denial. But, you know, as she said, you don't hear a lot about it. Even I didn't know very much about it until I started doing research on my own.
Mm. Let's go to Donna. Donna's calling from Baltimore. Donna, welcome to Two Way Talk.
How are you doing, Anthony?
Hey, great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. You know, a lot of us, you know, across all color spectrums have somebody in our family with autism. And one of the things I learned in, you know, doing my research is that autistic children, whether they're high-functioning, mid-functioning, or low-functioning, they see things that we don't see. If you put them in front of a computer, they see things that we don't see. And I always wanted to see more studies done because mid-functioning autistic children and young adults, they are fascinated with computers, and they, once you put them on the computer, they take off. I don't know too much about low function, but I don't think it's any different. I just think that you would have to acclimate them to the use of a computer or some form of technology, because they do use the tablet to communicate. And I, so I wanted to ask your guest two things. Does your son use, do they teach him how to use a tablet to communicate to you? Because, you know, especially when they're mid to low functioning. And my second question is, and this is something I think a lot of parents don't think about, when they reach, one of the things, when they reach 18, they consider an adult and they can make decisions for themselves. Well, you know that's not possible when they're mid to low functioning. And I think the state needs to change that law and push, you know, to some form of permanent guardianship for parents, because when you have autistic children who are mid and low functioning, they can't make decisions, they can't live on their own, whatever. And it has to be a guardianship provision that will continue to have adult supervision when they're alive, as well as when they pass away, to make sure that those adults, when they become adults, to make sure they're taken care of when you're no longer here. And I wanted your guests to talk about that, because that's a topic that no one really talks about.
Donna, thank you so much. Those two questions to you, Dr. Austin. What do you think about that? Technology, to communicate technology, autistic children, there is at least a perception that they do use technology, that they are adaptable to technology.
Right. She just made something, and as she was even saying about computers and tablets, I couldn't help but to just laugh, because my son is so good at computers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's how he learned to talk. We just had kind of just decided that he probably wouldn't ever talk, because he wouldn't. And we used sign language, and that showed him how to say some words, like one syllable words. And then once he started going to preschool and using a tablet there, there's a program called Tap to Talk. And you can record the child's voice. And I think he liked hearing his own voice saying words. And that's when he started speaking a little bit more. But they usually are really not only good at computers and tablets and electronics, but my son can figure out anything. Like, sometimes even we hide things from him, and he could always figure out where we hit something.
Wow.
Or even, like, certain things with the TV. Like, we had gotten this brand-new TV, and we couldn't figure out how to use YouTube. And the next thing we knew, we heard him listen to music, and he had figured it out. And I was like, wow, it only took a few seconds. And
even when
my sister-in-law had a cell phone, and she couldn't figure out exactly how to use some of the features. And he had it and was using it. So it's like it's just something in the wiring of their brains that they, maybe it's because they really concentrate, but they do know how to figure things out electronically, and they do know how to do, they're very smart. And they do know how to do a lot of things that the average person probably couldn't. So that was a really good point that she raised.
Isn't that something? And then she thought, how can we deal with their adulthood when they're 18, guardianship, those kinds of things, if they are limited on their growth potential, or not growth, their potential of adulthood?
Right. I would say here in Florida, we have the Agency for Persons with Disabilities, and I'm sure they probably have the same thing in every state. And so find that agency, because they have a lot. Usually, even in schools, they have different life transition programs, so that usually children with autism, depending on the severity, if they have severe autism, they can go to school until they're about 21 or 22.
Oh, wow.
And usually they have various types of programs where they can go into either day programs, or if they're able to work, they help them find employment. So they have all these life skills programs and transitional programs that they learn about in school. But the main thing is to find the Agency for Persons with Disabilities in your state.
That's right.
And just look at their website. And it's best to go ahead and sign up for those services. If you have a small child, sign up for them now, because the waiting lists are extremely long. Mm-hmm. That's one of probably the biggest challenges we face, is just the idea that knowing that my son is 16, almost 17, before you know it, he'll be 18. and just trying to determine what to do once they become adults, because when you hear about autism, you hear people talk about children, but not so much teenagers and people and adults with autism. So I would say go to the disability, wherever the agency for persons with disabilities is in your state, and then also there usually are disability rights organizations, and go to those organizations. There also is a really good national organization called Autism Speaks that has a lot of information. And then there's a relatively new group that's specifically for black families called The Color of Autism. And so I would say go to their website because they have a lot of information about services for teenagers and also for adults.
Now, here in Baltimore, we're blessed to have so many great institutions. The Kennedy Krieger Institute, one of the best around the country at not only educating and diagnosing and treating children with autism, but really advocating for them as well. So we're blessed in the city of Baltimore, but they serve, of course, nationwide. They advocate for people with autism. If you'd like to join our conversation, callers are calling in. So we're going to continue this as long as you can stay with us, Dr.
That's
Austin. 410-319-8880. Lori's on the line. Lori, thanks for calling Two Way Talk.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
This
is a very interesting and personal subject matter for me. I'm mother of a 27-year-old autistic young man. And he actually wasn't diagnosed. His history is kind of complicated. He really wasn't diagnosed until he was about 20. But what I wanted to bring to the table is just, I guess, let me say it this way. I think about the symbol of autism. You know, the symbol of autism is that big puzzle piece. That's a reminder to me of how complex the human brain is, number one. And so what I wanted to add or bring to the table is not to, is to just take everything into consideration and not to really totally refute or eliminate the possibility of vaccines as being a possible contributor and not necessarily causation, but maybe correlation. And then the other thing is that I'm a nutrition student, and so I've read a very interesting book from Dr. Liz Lipsky. It's called Digestive Wellness. And in that book, she brings out the piece where autism is very much correlated with nutrition. And if you notice, a lot of autistic kids have digestive issues. So there's a correlation there. So I just want to point out that just as complex as autism is, it's not one, it's not any one thing that can cause it. It's not any one thing that's correlated to it. My son is just different from another little boy with autism. They're so different, so unique. And so I just wanted to bring that to the table that it could be one thing, could be a number of things.
Lord.
Nutrition.
No, thank you so much for sharing that and sharing your story with us as well. Dr. Austin, again, I don't think we dismissed vaccinations, but scientifically it's been proven the connection just for scientists is not there. But we certainly, I don't think we can say definitively anything about autism.
I mean, I think that just was my opinion based on what I read. But
me
like
too.
You said, we shouldn't dismiss anything because it's a spectrum. And, it, you know, like she talked about the symbol, the puzzle piece, which shows the complexities of the human brain. And it could be the medications have something to do with it. But quite frankly, I don't think that was the case with my son. But like she said, we shouldn't dismiss anything.
That's right. 410-319-8888. That's the number to join our conversation. Reverend Blair, always great to hear from you. Welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hey, how you doing? Pray all is well with you and your guest and your co-host.
Thank you, sir.
Well, you know, my wife and I for the last 5 or 6 years been doing the Mbutu Project, which we started with a grant from the Lilly Foundation and Calvin Theological Seminary. Working with faith institutions around this subject of autism, DDI, MI, you know, developmental disabilities, mental health, illness. So, and we've been doing this over 5 or 6 years. And I'm primarily, my wife's nephew was diagnosed with autism as well as leukemia and several other issues when he was born. So we basically started this work working with him and looking at how our church in New York worked with him in putting the pieces together to ensure that he had a productive sort of life. So we started working with the school and community, and he was nonverbal for a period of time until we got folk active to help him become verbal, you know, and help with parental care, which is my sister-in-law is a pastor of a church, help her, you know, with the external issues, you know, and get folk to realize that we can't hide folk in the closet anymore. You understand? Because faith groups can be very severe when your kid starts acting out in church, as the young lady was talking about. You know, they get that. You know how it is back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
You can't. So we got devices for him, so the earpieces, and other children in our congregation, and work with parents to say, hey, you know, you can bring your child to church. We'll make them part of service. We'll make them part of church and then extend that service out, I believe, to your home.
Uh-huh.
And that's been working with us for several years on that. I figured I'd just call in because there has to be a faith perspective in this. That, you know, saying, you can't hide kids, you know, and we teach
that's
and
right.
we serve. I mean, a lot of different things that we do, but I just wanted to say God bless you all for bringing this subject up. I mean, needs to be more of that. Testing needs to be done early. We can't, like I said, we can't hide from this, especially in the African American faith-based community. I don't care what denomination you are, but we have to step up and provide services and education and learning on this subject matter around developmental disabilities, mental health issues, substance abuse, and all the things that come along with this issue. But thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Blair, one of my favorite friends. Reverend Blair listens to us all the time and shares his expertise. What about that? You said at the beginning of this conversation that you were a woman of faith. How has right. this played into your faith?
I think that I'm glad that he mentioned the fact that at his church they want to include the children with autism and other disabilities, because that's the same thing at my church. I go to a small Church of Christ. And the good thing about my church is my pastor has an adult son who also has autism, who's in his 40s. And so I think he and his wife probably noticed some things about my son even before I did.
Wow.
And they have been very helpful. But at our church, because it's sort of like we're a big family, in going to the church, at first when my son was probably about 3, he started having tantrums.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes we'd be in church and he would just scream for no reason. And so I wasn't so much embarrassed by it because everybody by that time knew that he had a disability, but it got to a point that I just stopped going to church. And I remember when my pastor and his wife called me and they were like, look, you need to bring him to church. And I was like, well, you know, you see his behavior. And they were saying, well, yeah, but if anybody has a problem with him being in church, then they need to leave. This is his church home. And,
amen.
You know, and then when we would go to church, people would come up to him, and sometimes he would have a problem with people approaching him. But people would come up to him and they would play with him, and they would always show him love and show our family love. And that really made a huge difference, because I don't think I would even be able to cope with the things that I deal with now if it weren't for the fact that I have faith and also I have a really good church home.
That's nice. So tell me now, thinking of your son, what are your dreams for him? What are your hopes for him as you watch him grow up, as you watch him live and laugh and experience life? What, as a mom, what are your hopes for him?
Well, my hopes are for him to, of course, be healthy.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just a blessing just to have a child who is healthy physically, and also to continue to make progress. And just we just take it one day at a time. We just let him just be himself. And some days he has good days, some days he has bad days, to surround him with people who love him, who will take care of him, even when I'm no longer here, to make the necessary arrangements, because I also have a daughter who's 15, and to make sure that she won't be burdened with having to take care of him, because I have a support system with my family and my brother and my sister, my husband's family. And so just to hope that he'll just live a happy and healthy life and just live the kind of life that God intends for him.
That's wonderful. Now, Now let's think about, what do you think we need to do more in our public schools, in our society, for people with autism? How can we adapt? How can we grow? And how can we provide the services that people need in our public mm-hmm. school system and in, across society?
I think that we need to, just as a society, to do more to try to help the families, because I'm in a position where I'm very blessed in the sense that I have a husband that's always been by my side and been very helpful with me. I have friends. I have my church family. I have a good job, because these treatments can be very expensive, and it's really hard to get any type of assistance financially sometimes with the types of treatments and therapies that your children need. So I would say the best way to help is to continue to lobby your state legislator and to tell them that there's a need for families to get the kind of help that they need. Because, I mean, I even have had situations in the past where I've had to go and pick up my son early from school, and I have the kind of flexible schedule that I can do that. But I only can just imagine if I had a 9-to-5 job, uh-huh. and if I was a single mom and having to take care of this, and at least I have one autistic child. What if I've met people who've had more than one. I even met a woman who's a single mom of 3 children with autism. And so in those situations, those are people who really need not only financial help, but they need emotional help as well, because it can really be overwhelming having to deal with it. You can't just find a babysitter if you need a break. So I would say just if you see someone who is a family member of someone with autism, just go up to them and see if they need any help and see if there's any way you could reach out to them. And then also continue to lobby your politicians to make sure they're doing what they need to do to provide the type of help financially and otherwise to people who need the services that are really going to help their children.
Sharon Wright, Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, professor from the University of Florida, discussing with us over the last hour what we can do. She is a mother of a child with autism in the Black community, how we start these conversations and how we can do more. Dr. Austin, what a joy to talk to you about this experience. And thank you for joining us today.
It was a pleasure.
I really appreciate you. And I'm sure we'd be talking politics again soon.
Definitely.
Dr. Austin, thank you.
All right. Cool.
You're listening to Two-Way Talk. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Anthony McCarthy. This is Two-Way Talk here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9. Today is National Coming Out Day, and all across the country there are celebrations and events, and people are sharing their coming out stories. I came out when I was about 19, 20 years old in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. I was attending Eastern Mennonite College and was attending a gay support group at James Madison University. But I had not come out yet. I hadn't told a single person. Even in the group, I would tell people, oh, I'm not gay. I'm just supportive of gay people. And interestingly enough, on National Coming Out Day, I was 20. I don't think I was 19. I was probably about 20 years old. And there's only one TV station in our entire town. And the camera was set up at James Madison University. And people started going up to the microphone and coming out. And I don't know what came over me, but I became so inspired. I stood up, and everyone in the group was like, oh, my God, no. I walked to the microphone, and I told my story. And I told my story about why it was so difficult for me to come out as gay. And it was because I've been raised in a Christian home, and I've been taught how wrong it was, but that I had to tell this story or I couldn't be myself. And I went home after that. I felt so liberated from telling it. But then it dawned on me, one television station, my parents always watched television. I had not told my parents. So I called my mom on the phone and she answered the phone and I was making small talk. And I said, Mom, I have to tell you something. And she could tell in my voice. She said, Anthony, you don't want to do this. And I said, no, Mom, I do. I have to tell you. I need you to listen. And I said, Mom, I'm gay. And there was silence. And then I heard my father's voice on the phone. He said, Anthony, your mother's going to have to call you back. I didn't speak to my mother for weeks, and I felt so lost. And then one day, I was living close to campus, and I heard a knock on my door. And I opened the door, and there stood my mother. My mother is a beautiful, big black woman, and she just took me in her arms, and she said, you know, I will never stop loving you. That was my story. That's how I came out. I became an ordained minister. I have ministered to gay, straight, black, white. I share the story because really the most difficult part was not if my mother rejected me. I was afraid that my God would reject me. And when I learned that I was okay with my God, I wanted to tell the world. Today's National Coming Out Day. That's my story. You're listening to Two-Way Talk here on Public Radio.